Shining, sharp-shooting Sherlocks, welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 89, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your formidable formation of four, foraging for formulas and for Four Loko.
Ooh.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
That was good.
The good Four Loko,
yeah.
Right?
The
vintage
original
stuff.
The,
yeah.
the vintage stuff. And this episode is brought to you by website builder, content platform, and hosting service provider Squarespace. Squarespace lets you build all kinds of slick websites like blogs, portfolios, wedding sites, galleries, storefront, and a beautiful customer-facing destination for your small business. GoodJobBrain.com and our store are both built on Squarespace, and we've never looked back. For a free trial, head on over to squarespace.com/goodjobbrain, and for 10% off a purchase, use the code POPQUIZ. And I just have a quick special shout out to Julie, and she wanted me to say hello to Ryan, Aaron, Allison, Becky, Teddy, Lee, Elena, Jonathan, and Matthew. So, hi, you guys.
Hey, you guys.
Hey, guys.
Julie actually went to the same school as I did back in Taiwan, so
whoa.
You know, I was like, oh, what a coincidence. Let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. And I have a random card, Trivial Pursuit card from the box, and you guys have your barnyard buzzers. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Blue wedge for geography. Oh, name two of the four U.S. states that are actually commonwealths.
Oh.
How do you guys, Chris?
Massachusetts is a commonwealth.
Yes.
Correct.
And I believe Virginia is as well.
Correct.
Oh. What are the others?
That's all I know.
Kentucky, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Virginia.
Ah. Okay. That's right. That's a good trivia one. Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, what's a...
I've looked this up so many times.
Yeah.
So many times. It has something to do with laws and how the government...
How the government is structured. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I'm embarrassed. I can't remember.
Nice and vague.
Yeah. Very hand-wavy.
Another list question. Pink wedge for pop culture. Name four of the seven Von Trapp children in The Sound of Music.
Oh, man.
All right, well... Liesel. Everybody knows Liesel.
Correct.
Okay.
Skippy.
Yeah.
There's two boys.
The Beef.
Oh, man.
Cindy.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Hitler.
Hans. Something like that.
All right, wait, okay.
So, I'm making up German
you're
names.
Just,
yeah, you're just guessing.
Oh, man.
Swiss
names.
All right,
what are they?
They're Austrian.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Right. Can't even agree on the country.
Arnold.
Yeah.
Wow, they are Liesel, Friedrich, Louisa, Kurt, Brigitte, Marta, and the little one, Gretel.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Jeez.
Wow.
Thumbkin.
That all sounds right. Yeah.
All right. Sure.
It was a 1 for 7 out of the three of us.
You know what? Some things you just know or you don't.
Yeah.
All right. Yellow wedge. Tommy Lee Jones and Al Gore were roommates at what university? Chris.
Yale University.
Incorrect.
What?
What is Harvard?
You don't need to do what is, but okay. Harvard.
When you said Tommy Lee Jones, I just thought Tommy Lee. I was like, Pamela Anderson.
Purple wedge. Bill Gates bought whose notebook for more than $30 million in 1994? Dana.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Correct.
Yes.
And it's said here, it's written in reverse lettering, commonly called mirror writing, which we talked about before.
I think we did.
Fun. Green wedge for science. What is the sole component of ozone?
Oh, we have talked about this.
The sole component of ozone.
Chris.
Oxygen?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm. All right. Orange wedge. Oh, a sports question. Finally. Pete Rose was banned for life from Major League Baseball for what? Dun, dun, dun.
Generally for gambling.
Yes, for betting on baseball.
And, mm-hmm. In particular, for betting on baseball while he was in the league.
So
yes.
Is it okay if he gambled in other sports? Or
you know, yeah. I mean, he would probably be in the Hall of Fame if he had just gambled on other sports. But you can't bet on the sport that you are playing
conflict
and managing.
Of interest?
Yeah, to say the least.
A touch, yeah.
To say the least, yeah. Yeah. And, well, and then he lied about it, too. Yeah.
He's like, no, I didn't.
He denied it for, yeah, right. He eventually came clean.
Mr. Rose. Good job, brains. So this morning, I do this a lot, I guess, like when we record. I ran a half marathon today, And it was awesome because I got my best time.
Oh.
But before I came over here to Colin's place to record, I spent half an hour trying to pop all the blisters from my feet.
Oh.
And
that's great.
And
wow.
That's something when you exercise a lot, if you're on your feet a lot, you get blisters. And I had like crazy blisters that were growing on top of each other. Anyways, it was very complicated.
Oh, okay.
Which ties in neatly to,
neatly to what?
Messily. Like
I'm right. glad I brought that up.
I'm glad I brought it up because, for this episode, we decided to talk about feet. So enjoy.
So if you're not grossed out yet,
hold on.
Buckle up. Yeah.
So this week, get on your feet.
All right, I'll start us off here with a quiz I'm going to call Foot Facts with an exclamation point.
Foot Facts.
I've noticed that a lot of my quizzes have exclamation points in the titles.
Oh, it's good. It means they're excited.
So,
I almost did the same thing. I was doing something called Sock Facts, but then I didn't do it. I thought better of it.
Sock Secrets.
Sock Secrets.
So newsflash for you guys.
We have 10 toes.
Basketball players tend to have big feet. I don't know if you guys knew this.
Okay. Oh,
they tend to have big feet.
Sure. So I've heard.
Yeah, so let's start it off here with a question for you guys. Mm-hmm. Logging in at a whopping size 23.
Yeesh.
American sizing. Uh-huh. Tell me what NBA superstar wore the biggest shoes in league history. Karen.
I believe this is Shaquille O'Neal.
It is right. Shaquille uh-huh. O'Neal.
His shoe size is 23. E-E-E.
Yes.
Triple E's mean super wide.
Yes.
Like that the right. letters.
It is big and wide. I tried to find some conversion to European sizing. I know we have a lot of European listeners. Yeah. It is literally off the charts on every chart I found.
Okay.
So yeah. I did some of my own conversions here. I believe that converts to size 56 European sizing. So
Whoa.
There you go. Yeah. Big, big feet.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. He actually started the league. He wore size 22s apparently, which there were several other players had size 22. There are five at least. And then as he had some foot and toe injuries over the course of his career, he went up a size and moved up to size 23.
Huh.
And can go online and find pictures of his shoes next to normal human objects. I mean, it's just comical. Like a picture of his shoe next to a laptop, or you know, he gave one to President Obama and Obama put it up next to his foot. It is comical.
He can probably wear the shoe
a snow boot. Yeah, just put some suspenders on it. You got some snow boots.
Right.
So, Karen, you recently brought up the question for us. What is the official name of the eye chart, you know, that we see?
Yeah.
And it was...
Do you guys still know?
Dr. Seymour Letters.
No. Snelling.
Snellen chart.
Snellen.
You're going to write that for real on Pub Quiz one day. We're going to be...
We did.
One day.
Yeah, we wrote it.
We did. That was the one time you ever wrote a joke, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, no, we erase it. We don't do joke things.
Oh, I think we put, like, Bosch and Lohm or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We tried to make a real guess.
Yeah.
In a related vein, I have a question about another industry standard. When you go to the shoe store, what is the official name of the little metal device with the sliders that you put your feet on to tell you what size and width shoe you should wear? It is a patented device. It has a very specific name.
We had this, too.
Yes,
we have definitely
had this.
Oh, man. Dr. Seymour Toes.
It is a Brannock device.
Really?
A Brannock device named after its inventor, Charles Brannock of Syracuse, New York.
Brannock?
Brannock. Yeah, B-R-A-N-N-O-C-K. Okay. A Brannock device. He patented it when he was 23 years old in 1926. Oh. His father was in the shoe business, so it wasn't totally out of left field for him to be interested in feet. But yeah, it's one of those devices that came along at just the right time. And
yeah.
It was patented and became an absolute industry standard. And you go into a shoe store today and it's still the Brannock device. If you were to go to a doctor and ask for stiletto surgery, what type of procedure would you be asking for?
Stiletto surgery?
Stiletto surgery. This is a common name, not a technical name.
Oh, okay.
And I'll give you a little hint. By and large, the people who go for this are female, yes.
Oh, okay. I think I know.
Karen.
Is it bunion surgery?
It at its most mild could include things like that, Chris.
It is foot narrowing.
At its most extreme, stiletto surgery is toe shortening or toe removal.
Toe removal.
So you can fit into tight shoes better. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's like Cinderella.
It is, to me, it is crazy.
Well, with more anesthetic.
The women who get it swear that it's necessary. Very broadly, it's any of a few procedures basically to make your feet fit better into tight shoes. Hmm. So at its most extreme, it can include removal of the pinky toe, which is the absolute most extreme. It can also have shortening, I guess, you know, shortening of the second toe to make it as shorter than the big toe is a little more common, where they will literally remove part of the bone and shorten your toe.
Mammy's little baby love shortening toes.
It can also include collagen injection into the balls of your feet. It's like having little built-in soles. Yeah. You know,
Air Max.
This is a rising trend among women who absolutely need to wear their tight-fitting shoes.
Do you know how tall the shoes should be? Like what a foot doctor would say. If you had to wear heels, what's the highest?
I don't know.
Platform or no platform?
Heels.
Okay, so
like
net.
For a heel.
So net.
Yeah,
net
is it like one height. Inch, 2 inch, 3 inch, 4 inch?
3.5.
I'm going to guess 2.
It's 2.
Oh,
they say
don't
go above 2.
Don't go above 2.
Yeah. So again, not all doctors will perform these procedures.
Oh, yeah, right.
In fact, my favorite quote here comes from Dr. David Levine. I don't have anything inherently against cosmetic surgery. I have no problem if someone wants to change their nose or their boobs, but you don't walk on your boobs. And indeed.
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 Mm-hmm. You can. You can slide around. Maybe. Wow. So this counts as cosmetic.
You can't have some of these procedures for medically necessary conditions, but to call it under the blanket term of stiletto surgery, we're talking about for cosmetic reasons.
Huh.
True or false? Humans have evolved to the point where the pinky toe no longer serves a purpose.
Ooh. True.
Chris says true.
I use mine, so I don't
might
know.
Think you use it.
To pick up stuff.
Yeah, I definitely use it.
Or to kick stuff. To kick stuff.
To climb trees, to grasp objects.
You don't know.
That is false.
What?
We do still use the pinky toe, but for balance, primarily.
Oh yeah?
So if you sort of imagine, you've got like 3 points. You got your heel, the first knuckle of your big toe, and the first outer knuckle of your pinky toe are really sort of the base of balance when you're on your feet. Now, that said, most foot experts say that, if you lost your pinky toe or if you happen to be born without one, you get along just fine in the modern world.
Because that's the number one spot on your foot when you accidentally kick something.
Oh, my God. It's seen some stuff. It's been broken so many times.
Like, there's that 1 second where you realize, like, oh, I just hit my pinky toe.
Oh, because it's the furthest thing from your brain.
It takes
it's
like a dinosaur.
It's just working its way up there.
And then the pain
and it's got to go uphill.
The pain hits and you're like, oh.
Such a disproportionate amount of pain for the size of your anatomy.
Exactly.
All right. So talking about the pinky toe, why do we call it the pinky toe? Where does it, and I'll give you a little bit of a connection here. It comes from pinky finger.
Okay,
it's named the pinky toe after the pinky finger. But why do we call it the pinky finger? Where does that word come from?
Aww,
this one blew my mind.
Cute.
Blew my mind.
Wow. Okay. We're not gonna guess it.
I want to hear your guesses, though.
Well,
this is the fun
part. Does that have something to do with the color pink?
It does not.
Oh.
Okay.
Pinkerton.
We get the word pinky ultimately from Dutch, but via Scottish English, and going way back, it really is just a root. Just means little. So like pink just meant little, and pinkie with a J was kind of a diminutive form meaning little finger.
Mm.
So now this is where it gets interesting. So it came into, as I say, into Scottish English, and then it seems like we picked it up from there. And for a long time, just pinky meant anything tiny, like a fleck of dirt or a little pebble or a tiny little hole in the wall. It could be like a pinky in 18th century.
English?
In Scottish English
in Scottish
particular.
English, okay.
Yeah, like the little pinky. In fact, today in modern Dutch, pink is little finger.
Hmm.
So now this is interesting. So you guys know
Game of Thrones?
This is related.
That'd be
great. Pink eye does not have to do with the fact that your eye turns pink when you get pink eye, which I always assumed. In old Dutch, they believe that the expression pink ogen, as I said, pink meant small, meant half-closed eyes, or literally small eyes. That if you've got a pink eye, you can't open it. So pink eye meant small eye. And we took both the word and the meaning. So that's how pink eye and pinky are related.
That's like an almost acorn.
Yeah, it is an almost acorn. It makes sense.
Wow.
I love that. That's my anatomical etymology of the week. And that's Foot Facts.
Yay!
Hey. Deserving of the exclamation point, to be sure.
Growing up, your parents would tell you reasons for stuff. You're kind of doubting it. You don't know if it's a fact, but it's believed to be a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, growing up, my dad used to tell me that, I don't know if you guys have this, but in your inner forearm, an inch and a half from your crease of your elbow towards your hand, some people have a very light crease.
Oh, I do.
You have it?
I think I do. Is that it right there?
Yeah.
I don't have it. I have no crease.
Yeah.
So I have it on both arms. And growing up, my dad always said, oh, this is a genetic thing. It means you're Han Chinese, which is a ethnic group. It's like, oh, Han Chinese people have this line.
I have it on my other arm.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. But I don't really believe that only this type of people have it. Obviously, we're just proven around the table that
I can verify that Chris and I are not Chinese.
And another weird body growth or oddity that my dad would tell me that is a means that I'm Han Chinese is I assumed everybody had it on your pinky toe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your toenail.
Yeah.
Some people like me have an extra toenail in the corner.
What?
Wow. I thought everybody had it. So you have your normal pinky toenail.
Yes.
And in the very corner, you have like another little circle. That's like a toenail.
Like growth. Overlapped like a fish scale?
No, it's just like on the side.
Huh.
And it's kind of by itself.
No.
But it's there.
Okay. No, not me.
No. Oh, okay. Yeah. And it's sometimes called the split pinky toe. The official name of this is called the accessory nail of the fifth toe.
Accessory nail. Sounds like an upsell. No, can I interest you in the accessory nail?
No, it does look like, because you have your normal pinky toe and it's like this little toenail in the corner. It is a physical trait of the small toe. And it's one of the very famous kind of legends is that, oh, all Han Chinese people have them. And there are some myths or some origin stories that are not true. They're probably just legend or urban legend. They're all kind of gruesome and violent, so I'm not going to share with these.
There are
a couple of them. They're all like, yeah. And then I was digging deeper. There are other cultures claiming that that's a definitive trait of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like the elbow crease in Celtic culture, they're like, oh, that means you're pure Celtic. So a lot of cultures actually have this trait too. So I just want to share with you these two body oddities. The accessory nail of the fifth toe.
So does your whole family have that?
I like never asked. I don't know. In terms of size,
I want to see
it. It's pretty small.
Show us your toe.
Oh, no.
Show us your toe.
Because I'm missing a lot of my toenails.
Yeah, I want to see it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well,
runner's feet immediately post-marathon.
I was going to be like, oh, we should put a picture of it.
But yeah, so that's a weird pinky toe thing. Oh, I have another body oddity, actually.
Right.
I have two holes on the upper part of my left ear where it's connected to my head, where your ear is connected to your head.
No.
What?
And it's not a piercing.
Termites.
Do they look like piercings?
It's a hole? Yeah. How far does it go?
A centimeter or like almost a centimeter.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I have another one up here too.
Huh.
Weird.
And I looked that up. That is not one of those Han Chinese things. It's just a deformity that a lot of people have too. If you're listening and you're like, hey, wait a minute, I have holes on my ears, not piercings. It looks like piercings, but
I do.
You're in good company because I have them too.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about weird feet too. Well, sorry.
Well, nice value judgment there, Tana.
In my head, there was no value judgment. And out loud, I was like, look on Karen's face. I was like, wait a minute. Special, beautiful.
Perfect, just the way you are.
Yes, right. You are beautiful.
A weird alien kind of beautiful.
Why is a mile 5,280 feet?
Oh, those kind of feet.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's one of those just like they change the standard like 100 times over 1,000 years, one of those things, right?
So a mile originally came from Roman. It was a mile passum, which is 1,000 paces. and one pace is 5 feet. So that equaled about 4,850 modern feet, which is still not 5,280.
Right.
Like, where did that come from? So in 1592, the British Parliament decided that they would standardize it because, you know, it was inexact. It was hard to say what a mile was.
Ish.
Yeah. Ish. Ish. So they were like, all right, we'll make them furlongs. It is 8 furlongs. Do you know how long a furlong I'm sure the looks in your faces.
Furlong is a distance. 1/8 of a mile.
I've read it's something to do with.
It's the length of the furrow a team of oxen could plow in a day. So it's eight days of oxen plowing is 1 mile.
Oh man, it makes
sure.
Really simplifying things.
And if you don't have your own team of oxen, then
if one of the oxen is sick, then
on average, so it's about 660 feet times 8. It's 5,280 feet.
Oh my God.
So it's like, even, it's not even a week of oxen plowing. It's 8 days. It's
like, damn it.
It didn't make
old
it.
Timey people. Get your act together.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, I grew up with the metric system. Uh-huh. What is actually a foot? Why is it a foot?
It comes from like feet, like the
your
length of your feet,
foot.
Like originally, like going way back.
People would measure things out in paces.
Yeah,
right?
They would measure things, and it was just
it is about like 12 inches.
See? Yeah, a pace was 5 Roman feet, but that's shorter than our modern foot.
So then, where did inches come from?
Inch is one of those things where I think it was defined relatively. It was like, oh, it's 1/12 of a foot. I've also seen stuff where it's like an inch was 3 barleycorns. You know, so like you would,
of course.
It was like you would put 3 barleycorns together because everyone has barleycorns naturally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like that was an inch and it's all very arbitrary.
Yeah. Old timey farmer people were like scientists that could, I don't know why they didn't go to the moon sooner. They knew all the answers.
Sing.
My God, they were on top of it, but it doesn't make any sense anymore.
But now we just use it. I mean, it's been said.
5 tomatoes.
Yeah. Yes, 5 tomatoes.
That's our mnemonic.
The mnemonic.
Oh, yeah. Feet in a mile.
5, 2, 8, 0.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. 5 tomatoes.
So when I think of feet, obviously, I think of Santa Claus. This is timely to this. If you're listening to this episode just as it's coming out, early December, December 5th is St. Nicholas's Eve in Benelux, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, and in some other parts of Germany and some other parts of some other European countries.
What is
It's the celebration of Sinterklaas, the Santa Claus-esque figure character from which American Santa Claus comes from. Yeah.
Got it.
But they celebrate it around St. Nicholas's Eve because, of course, Sinterklaas came from St. Nicholas, which came from, you know, St. Nicholas, et cetera, who apparently was a real person, as far as anybody knows. What they do, some European countries around this time, is kids will be putting out originally, it was their shoes, but now, much like we have Christmas stockings, it's wooden clogs that are like for this purpose. Put them by the fireplace, and you fill them with straw or sugar cubes or carrots for St. Nicholas's horse.
Because he's a horse.
Okay. For his horse.
Oh, I was kidding. I didn't know. Okay.
Well, kids put out the treats for the reindeer and stuff like that, too.
These pauses, so it's like four. And
four.
I was like, is it for the kids? Because that's really weird.
No, it's for his horse.
For his horse. Okay.
So it shoes by the fireplace. Now, how did all of this actually happen? Well, we know that there probably was a guy named St. Nicholas, historically. In general, the stories that are passed down about him is that he was very generous. Now, the more specific story, which, you know, it's probably apocryphal, but the big tale is that there were 3 girls that were going to be sold into slavery, basically.
Whoa.
Because their dad didn't have enough money to support them, and he didn't have a dowry, so if anybody were to marry them, they didn't, you know, he needed money, basically, or else they were going to have to go away. So St. Nicholas gave them money, but then, you know, the story is that he came around late at night to give it anonymously to them and just threw the money in the window where it landed in their stockings, which were hung by the chimney because they were drying. That's what the legend says, basically. These countries were Christianized at some point in the, you know, this we're talking about early when the years had 3 digits in them kind of stuff. Why did St. Nicholas, of all people, become this popular figure? Theory is that the tales of St. Nicholas and his sort of wintertime generosity, whatever it was, got blended in with the tales of the Norse god Odin,
who
has a long beard and rides a horse and is closely associated with Yule, pre-Christian winter celebration.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So eventually, at some point down the line, it becomes, you know, Sinterklaas. Also, this was really interesting. At some point, these tales might have gotten blended together with La Befana, an Italian witch who puts gifts in the stockings of kids in Italy, and that she might have come from the Roman goddess Strenua.
Huh.
Christmas presents in Italy are known as strena. Like, that's the word for it. So, like, the Roman goddess might have turned into the witch, and La Befana probably comes from L'Epifana, or Epiphany, which is a certain holiday early in January, which is when a lot of Christmas stuff used to be celebrated. So it's like myths and tales and figures all just getting blended together, like going culture to culture. Yes, yep, yep. And now eventually at some point we go from shoes to stockings somehow. This was always kind of weird to me, the stockings, because, like, you know, you'd read about, you know, Twas the Night Before Christmas when they talk about the, which is actually titled, excuse me, it's titled A Visit from St. Nicholas.
Yes.
It's not titled Twas the Night Before Christmas. You read about Santa gives the gifts to the kids, but he just fills up their stockings, and, like, that's where all your presents go.
Right.
But when, like, I was a kid, like, you couldn't fit all the presents into the stocking.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fit He-Man action figures into the stocking.
Yeah,
so,
like,
you had presents under the
my
tree,
Super
right?
Nintendo. Yeah. Well, so, big old sock.
Yeah, go on.
In my family, like, the stockings were kind of like the appetizers, you know,
that's
like
did.
Little
yeah.
trinkets and candies and things like that.
You started with the stockings, yeah. But there was a back and forth about, you know, do we put presents under the tree or do we put them in the stockings? There's actually the Visit from St. Nicholas poem is credited with popularizing the idea of hanging Christmas stockings.
Got it, of course.
Okay, this is always one of my favorite parts of any Good Job Brain episode that I can squeeze this into.
All right.
It is a recitation of a New York Times article from December 26th, 1883. And it seems like more of an editorial than a news story.
Okay.
It is a significant fact that comparatively few Christmas trees were exposed for sale this year. There is a very evident decrease in the demand for them, and this is unquestionably due to the revival of the Christmas stocking. The stocking was for so many years so closely associated with Christmas that Christmas without stockings seemed inappropriately and insufficiently celebrated. The German Christmas tree, a rootless and lifeless corpse, was never worthy of the day. It continues.
I think this is an editorial, probably.
Yeah. In the days of the unobtrusive white stocking, no one could pretend that the stocking itself was a graceful or attractive object when hanging limp and empty from the foot of the bedstead. Now, however, since the adoption of decorated stockings, that article of dress has become a medium for the display of color and design. Then he goes on, the anonymous writer of this random piece that's
anonymous.
Stuck in the New York Times. Yeah, there's no name attached. What was needed to bring about the revival of the Christmas stocking was the invention of a variety of stocking especially designed for the reception of Christmas gifts. This want has been met by the invention of the Smith Christmas stocking.
This is an advertisement.
That's what I realized as I'm reading through this thing.
Advertorial.
So people quote this article because you can find this in the New York Times webpage, and I see a lot of people referring back to this article. But as I read this, I realized like an advertising article, probably like provided for free to the New York Times. That's probably what this was. Yeah, and so thus casting a whole lot of doubt on whether or not the stocking really was making a roaring comeback or whether he was trying to get it to make a roaring comeback wherever this was. But I will read you the final paragraph because it is a delight. The Christmas tree, dropping melted wax upon the carpet, filling all nervous people with a dread of fire. Remember, it was candles.
Yes.
Banishing the juvenile delight of opening the well-filled stocking in the dim morning light and diffusing the poison of rationalism thinly disguised as the perfume of hemlock should have no place in our beloved land.
Whoa.
It has had its day, and the glorious reaction in favor of the sacred stocking will sweep it away forever.
This person is on a mission.
I feel like he's missing the essence of America. Like, we have both. We'll take both.
Yeah,
of
we're
all,
an, yeah.
all of it.
Yeah, that's we it. We're an and. Like, you want all like, of the everything.
This
yep.
is not an
a
or.
A full stocking yeah. and presents under the tree. Yeah. Thank you very
it's
much.
It's like your complete breakfast. You have the cereal and the orange juice and the bagel and,
right.
the,
and
toast.
The toast.
And the eggs and the bacon.
Part of a complete Christmas.
Yeah. yeah. All of it.
Yeah, so anyway, I have no idea why we hang up stockings at Christmas. nobody can figure it out. It's such an old tradition. It just goes back and back and back. And then it's just sort of like, well, I guess we tell this story about St. Nicholas, but it's like, you made that up. Yep.
All right, let's take a quick ad break. A word from our sponsor.
Hey, kids.
Yeah?
Ready to rock the internet with your own totally electrifying website?
Electrifying.
Get ready. For Squarespace. For your blog. For your portfolio. For your cat photography.
Cat photography.
Totally rad and easy website building tools that anyone can jam to.
Jammin'.
Free yourself with this free trial. No credit card needed. Free domain registration with an annual subscription. Squarespace.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job, Right? And this week we're talking about feet.
What?
So speaking of feet, I want to talk about some people who make their business using their feet. It is the heart of football season. Oh. It's right there in the name, the foot in football. And, you know, it
sounds like American a Cole
football.
Carter song.
Yes, American football.
You put the foot in football.
Gal.
It all comes back to advertising. Yes, in particular, I'm talking about American football. We're in the heart of football season, NFL season right now. And, you know, the beauty of football, if you're a football fan, is that part of the beauty is that it's an all-weather game. You know, by and large, you play in open-air stadiums, and you play if it's sunny, if it's rainy, if it's windy, foggy, snow. You know, unless it's just outright hazardous and dangerous, you play, and you
I
play
feel like
on.
They shouldn't play in some of those weather conditions. That's, I don't know.
It's just how it's always been. It's
gotta
an outdoor. Or
they're,
a game,
they're
you know,
smashing each other's heads at
yeah, you're tough
high
guys.
Speeds, and they can take a little snow.
Okay.
Well, and you know, I mean, and a lot of the teams in cold weather environments in particular look at it as an advantage.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, we're used to it. And,
oh, sure.
You know, if you're
yep.
coming from Miami or San Diego, you may not be as used to it as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, at the time that we're recording here, it's a Sunday. And tonight in the NFL, the Denver Broncos are going to be playing the New England Patriots in New England in Foxborough Stadium. Now, this is a nighttime game. This is in Foxborough, Massachusetts, which is
cold.
Further north than where you grew up, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you can attest it's going to be cold there.
It's going to be cold.
Yeah. It's a 8:30 kickoff.
Ooh.
It's expected to be 21 degrees with a 20 mile an hour winds. With the wind chill factor, it should feel like 4 degrees on the field.
Oh, wait, Fahrenheit.
4 degrees. Yes, 4 degrees Fahrenheit. Yes.
Really
at
cold.
Kickoff. It's really, really cold. Yeah. I want you guys to imagine you're there on the field. It's 4 degrees.
Okay.
It may be snowing, maybe windy, you know, but you're out there to play.
All right, I want
to
leave.
And I want you to imagine. Taking off your shoes, what? Taking off your sock,
no.
Uh-huh.
And kicking a football as hard as you can.
What?
Oh, my God.
I wouldn't want to do that. It sounds really unpleasant.
They used to do this, didn't
they? They used to have barefoot kickers in the NFL.
Right.
Wait, why?
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, okay.
So I want to talk about not just football players, but the kickers in particular.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because even though there's the foot in football, most of the players on the field actually never touch the ball with their foot. It's really just the kickers.
Yeah.
They do a lot of run and throwing and catching. But these days, you don't kick the ball unless you're a kicker. So let's back up a second here. So in football, modern football, there's three kinds of kicking. There's punting. There's field goals, you know, where you kick it through the bars for the points. And then there's kickoff. You know, you start the game. Let's kick this off. That's where that saying comes from.
Wow.
in case you didn't know.
Trivia.
these days it's really specialized. Like on a team, you'll have dedicated punters, dedicated field goal kickers, dedicated kickoff people. Yeah, it's really hyper-specialized. I mean, in the old days, though, it was just whoever the best athlete was on your team would typically be the kicker, you know. And it makes sense. They're just, hey, let him kick. He's the best at it. So there have been two major changes over the years in football kicking. There have been a change in style from straight-on kicking to soccer-style kicking.
Okay.
And there's been a experimenting with barefoot kicking. So let's talk about the style first, because that's sort of the less sexy change, or the less comical, if you will.
Less naked body parts.
Yeah. For years and years and years, the way you would kick a football is you run straight at it and you kick it off the end of your foot, like where your toes, right? You know, straightforward.
Sure.
But around the 1970s in the NFL, they started to have an influx of mainly European players kicking more soccer style. Mm. They grew up playing soccer, so you come from the side and instead of kicking off the end of your foot,
you kick off
the instep. Yep. Yeah, or the inside of your foot. Yeah, it's more rigid. It's
more surface area.
More surface area, exactly. More control. And it was kind of a novelty at first. It was like, oh, the soccer style. Oh, it's a European thing. It seemed exotic. But, you know, it's pro sports. So, like anything, if it's successful, you copy it.
Yep.
And the soccer style players were generally more consistent, could kick longer distances more consistently, to the point that these days, every player kick soccer style.
Whoa.
Like there's no longer even a distinction. So that sort of was a shift that happened and was very complete. The other one that fascinates me though is the barefoot kicking. It seems like, all right, I'm going to kick something as hard as I can. I want to have some protection. I want to have a boot on there, you know? But sure enough, there was another fad. It started at the end of the 70s. Tony Franklin of the Philadelphia Eagles was the first barefoot kicker in the NFL.
Ow.
Kicked the first barefoot field goal in 1979. And part of the reason that it started a trend is because he was a really good kicker. At one time, he had kicked the longest field goal in collegiate history. Mm-hmm. Barefoot. Yeah, barefoot.
Right. Oh, okay, so again, if it seems to be working for somebody.
If it seems to be working, people will copy it. I'm old enough that I can remember watching football as a kid. It was not uncommon to see a barefoot kicker. It was just like, oh, they're, you know, a little uncommon, but that was how they do it.
I assume when you say barefoot, they're not wearing anything, on their feet.
No sock, no
Both
shoe.
Feet,
no, just the kicking foot.
Okay.
So it looks even weirder. I mean, you can find many pictures of
but
this.
But they still have to run, so they're running.
Well, so that's the thing, you know. I mean, a lot of people say, like, yeah, it's not just that you're kicking this ball barefoot, but that you don't have a cleat on it, and you're taking at least one step on that foot in your approach to the ball. In my mind, it seems like you're at a disadvantage too. It kind of peaked in the 1980s, and then it sort of faded away from there to this point where there hasn't been a barefoot kicker in over 10 years in the NFL.
Oh, but you still can if you want to.
You can if you want to. You are allowed to. There's no rule. So here's what's one of the funnier
There's
rules.
No rule that says a dog can't play football.
There was a rule, an NFL rule, that players had to have two socks. Can you guess what he did?
He put them both on the same
thing. No, he cut off the bottom of the sock. So it was just like a tube. It was,
I like my
it was basically
idea better.
Like a little, like a sweatband, and he would just pull it up to his calf, you know, just to sort of get around the letter of the rule of having two socks.
Like, it's on my foot. Was he a side kicker?
Yes, he was.
Because I can imagine kicking straight on with your toe is a mistake.
Yeah.
Like that would hurt.
Yeah, especially if you don't have a special boot or anything to protect it. I mean, and you would ask the barefoot kickers, like, well, and again, I mean, cold weather, windy weather, you know, you get out there and do it. And they say, yeah, it really stings. Because remember, in cold weather, the ball gets really hard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like imagine a football that, you know, and they'll try and warm it up and make it flexible. But still, I believe, and most people kind of believe, it's just if you're more comfortable doing it, you're going to be more successful at it.
Yeah. Although they do pay you well for doing that.
So it's worth it.
It might be worth it. Yeah.
In NFL culture, the kickers are kind of generally in the bottom of the totem pole in terms of respect. They're generally paid the least, but they score the most points.
My kicker on my fantasy team is treating me really well. So.
Yeah.
Good for you, kicker.
Yeah, they're consistent.
Or that one kicker. I don't even know his name. Matt Prater? Prater?
Prater?
Is he someone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's on my... I don't know.
Yeah.
I just play
He gets me points.
Yeah,
you
points.
Don't even play very well. Randomly pick out people and see how you do.
The top 25 scoring players in NFL history are all kickers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense if you think about it.
Because if they're treated, like you said, bottom of the
It's because generally they don't have to get tackled, which is why.
You're like, oh, it hurt my foot. And I'm like, everybody else has like all these crazy concussions.
Yeah, they probably live longer.
Yeah.
You're probably right.
You guys are all, at one point in your life, dog owners or have lived with dogs.
I've never had a dog.
Really?
No, always cats.
Oh.
It's cats all the way down.
You know what? Some cats actually have this weird phenomenon, mostly in dogs. It's called Frito feet.
Frito feet.
Frito, because, like, as in the corn chips?
Yeah.
Feet.
Sounds gross.
They're feet.
I'll just say right away, like, one of the things I think about.
Sounds delicious.
Another name is popcorn paws.
It sounds like a skin
issue, doesn't it? They smell salty?
When you take your dog out, or if your dog's having a ball outside, and they come back in, they smell different, right? Okay. They smell like a little bit gamier. Okay. They smell like outside. Nothing's wrong with your dog. It just happens when your dog goes outside and usually exerts a lot of energy and plays around. The thing is, dogs don't sweat. We know that, right? Dogs do not sweat.
Right.
They perspire by panting, but they do perspire from their paws.
Oh.
And they do, I mean, they do.
So they do sweat.
They sweat out their paws.
Yeah. And they do emit a light bit of perspiration through their hair follicles, which, you know, that has a chemical scent that is individual to the dog. When they're active, do conjure up some smells, just like the way we have VO.
Sure.
But what Frito feet refers to is most dogs, not all, but most, if you smell their paws, it has a very specific scent.
Okay.
That is different than wet dog smell, or that is different than outside dog smell. It smells nutty, little corny, kind of like tortilla chips, and maybe a little bit yeasty. Huh. It's called Frito feet. Like, my dog's paws do smell like that. Do smell like popcorn or corn products.
Really?
It's this specific smell from their paws. It doesn't mean anything's wrong with your dogs. It's just one of those things. It's one of those phenomenons that happen. Not all dogs have it. Some cats actually do have it, too. Their paws. It's just a paw scent.
Come all right, kitty. Get the paw cats.
Get the cat.
Yeah,
smell paw cats. Smell their paws.
It sounds weird. It doesn't necessarily smell bad. To me, it just smells like dogs are supposed to smell like.
Right. Yeah,
right. Their paws just a certain scent. And why their feet or their paws smell this way is because dog feet, within all the folds of skin and the pads, is a great place for bacteria and yeast to, you know, take up residence in a way. And not to say that that's bad, because all living beings have some sort of microbes, a bunch of microbes living on them, living with them.
Yeah.
Your belly button's a wonderland.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yep, yes. Yep. Because dogs perspire through their feet, and they're always on their feet and they're outside, I mean, that is a great place for microbes to live in. Some of these microbes will generate smells. And in combination with all of this chemistry going on, dogs' bodies, it just so happens the smell it gives off smells like corn products.
Interesting.
And this is a phenomenon. Like, a lot of dog owners will think, like, oh no, something's wrong with my dog.
Oh,
why does it smell like this? And they're like, don't worry about it. Unless it's super strong or abnormally strong, then, you know, maybe something's wrong. But you can just wash your dog's paws and if you really don't like the smell. But embrace
it. So it was like, if it smells like Cool Ranch, get him to the vet immediately.
Seek attention immediately.
Mm. Or your dog just stepped in ranch.
Combination. Which, yeah, for cool my dog, ranch. That is probably what happened.
So yeah, Frito feet or popcorn paws.
Cute. Less gross than I thought it was going to
be.
Yeah, I agree.
You know how, like, some people have toenails that look like Fritos? I thought it was going to be like that.
Yellow and speckly.
Yeah, and crunchy. And long and, like,
curly.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Well, this episode is about to end on the right foot. I hate you guys. Chris, you have one last quiz segment for us?
Yes. Appropriately enough, it is a word quiz. It is a quiz about English language idioms. You're making a face, Karen.
It's my own no face.
Yeah, this is Karen's weak point. Don't worry. I bet you'll answer some of these. So again, I just I started looking up sock facts, and then I totally got distracted, and I noticed that the word sock was used in many English language idioms and many expressions.
Oh.
And also, like, feet or foot, shoes even, too.
Oh, yeah.
So here is the quiz. I will give you guys the definition or the synonym, and you give me the idiom, and all of these will contain either the word sock or shoe or feet or foot.
Okay.
So here is number one. To impress someone greatly. Karen.
Oh, knock their socks off.
Yes.
Oh, all right. Good.
Is it knock or rock?
Knock their socks off. Okay. Yes. I don't want anything to do with that. Dana?
Never mind. I was going to say shoo it away.
No, but no.
If the shoe doesn't fit?
No.
Okay.
Colin?
Give it the boot?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's good.
That is not even something that I'm not going to mess with that.
Oh.
Colin.
I'm putting my foot down.
No.
Oh, dang it.
I'm not even going to get in there.
I won't put my shoe in. Oh, my foot in.
Colin?
I don't want to step in that.
No.
I don't
know. You know, I'm just thinking. What I'm thinking of is I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Foot like that.
Foot.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay. To see something from another point of view.
Oh.
Karen.
Walk a mile in their shoes.
Yeah, or step into someone's shoes or walk a mile in their shoes. Yep, yeah. Okay. To get involved with something immediately and with enthusiasm.
Oh.
Dana.
Is it jump in with both feet?
Yeah, jump in or dive in with both feet. Yep. Mm-hmm. Shut up. Oh. Dana.
Put a sock in it.
Put a sock in it. Yes, that's it. All right. To be the cause of one's own misfortune. Colin?
Tripping over your own feet?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I was going to say, well, you made your bed, now you have to lay in it.
One foot in the grave, one on a banana peel?
You know, maybe all of these are accurate. I was thinking to shoot yourself in the foot.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, that's more.
Yeah, right. To put something in a secure place.
Oh.
Colin?
To sock it away?
To sock something away. Yes, sock it away. To say something stupid. Dana?
Foot in mouth.
Foot in mouth, yes. Let me have it. Colin?
Sock it to me.
Sock it to me. There we go. Afraid to take action.
Oh.
Dana?
Cold feet.
Cold feet.
Scared sockless.
Scared sockless. Oh, I guess that's it. That's it. That's it. The end.
Yay. The end. All right. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about stockings, about Frito feet, about kickers and such, and other cornucopia of foot-related stuff.
Oh, is that a pun? Because there's corn on feet.
Ew. That's a gross pun. Sorry.
I was going to do something about diseases on of your feet.
Yay.
And then I was like, oh, this is going to get gross. But that may be why I said so many gross things.
It's your outlet. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And check out our sponsor at squarespace.com/goodjobbrain. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.